We begin the current daf in Safek Subas, daf Nun Gimel. We begin on the bottom of daf Nun Beis and Beis, three lines up in the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf, and that is, we mentioned the Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, regarding certain Tanai Ksuba, conditions that are inherent in every Ksuba, even if they're not written, it's as if they're written, and they're obligated in Midraban. One of them is that after that the father dies, and after that he had inherited his wife who passed away before him, her sons, because a man could have many wives, her sons inherit her kesuba that she never ended up getting, which rather the husband inherited, and then they get it afterwards. That's called kesubas benindich. Now the Gemara explained the reason for this institution is because we want the father-in-law, the wife's father, to send a large dowry for her daughter to take into the marriage. And the only way the father's going to do that is if he knows that when his daughter passes away, it's not going to go to the husband who the Yerusha goes on his side. Rather, it's going to go to her kids, meaning his grandchildren. And that's the purpose of Ksubas Ben Nidichin. So the Gemara illustrates this halacha with the following incident. Rav Papa went and was involved with his son, Be'Abisra, to marry him off by the household of Abisra, meaning marrying Abisra's daughter. Now, also, so Rav Papa went to the household of the father of the girl, L'michtav lo ksubasa, to write for her ksuba. In other words, that there's two parts to every ksuba. He wanted to go ahead and write up the contract of the ksuba, where there he's going to write from his son's side, promising the woman when she gets divorced or widowed a certain amount, which Besula is Masayim, and then there's Tosefos, there's some added stuff. Moreover, that at the same time, what's written in the ksuba is what the woman's father is bringing into the marriage, which is what's called in the dunya, that's the dowry. So he was going there to write up the ksuba document ahead of the wedding ceremony so that he could write his part and that the father of the girl, Abisra, could write also how much his daughter's going to be bringing into the marriage. Now, Shama Yehuda Bamarema heard that Rav Papa was on the street. So Nafak Asa Ischazulese went out and he went to see him, to see his acquaintance, Rav Papa. Now, Kimot Lepischa, when they came to the household of Abisra, Habakomiftimene. So Yehuda took permission from Rav Papa to go back where he had come from. So Amalei, Rav Papa said to Yehuda, Nail Marbadoi, let the master come with me into where I'm going, to Abisra, to my Mechutin's house. So we continue on top of Nandigimel Med Aleph. So Chazir, Rav Papa saw, Dolohav Nichalei, that Yehuda was uncomfortable coming in with him to Abisra's house. So Amalei, Rav Papa said to him, My daitach, what's your understanding? What's going on? Mishum de Amalei Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda? Is it because of this halacha that Shmuel had said to Rabbi Yehuda, who Shmuel many times calls Rabbi Yehuda Shin, the sharp one? He told him, Loitahave Bavurach Santa. You shouldn't be present when inheritance is being switched over from one child to another child. Afilim Ibra Bish Labra Tava. Even if it's going from a bad son to a good son, you shouldn't be present there because it's not an appropriate thing to do. Because the Loyadiyah Maizara Nafik, meaning you don't know which children are going to come out of the, so to speak, bad child. So it's not appropriate if the inheritance is supposed to go to one to switch it even to go to a good child. Now, V'choshkin Mibro Labrata. All the more so, you're thinking to take an inheritance from a son to a daughter is definitely inappropriate. Now, what we're going to do right now is switching inheritance because Abisra is going to be writing for his daughter what essentially would have been an inheritance of his son. So you're thinking, is that what you're thinking? That's why you're not coming in because what we're doing is wrong? But on that, Rav Papa says, if that's your problem, Hai Named Dekan D'Rabbanan, as we addressed this on the previous daf, this is also a rabbinic enactment of having the daughter take some of the estate to take into her new marriage. As we had explained this in the previous daf, Rabbi Yechanan said that which was learned out from Sukkim, that we want the father to give the daughter different things, clothing and money and estate, so that people want to marry her. So what's your problem? Why don't you want to come in? What Abisra is going to be writing for his daughter is a good thing. It's not like taking inheritance and switching it to a different party. So Amalei, so Yehuda said to her papa, Hanemili midaite. When did we say that it's a good thing for the father to write, to give his daughter things taken into our marriage? And again, that was why we have the Ksubas Ben Nidichin in the first place, as we explained in the previous staff, to enforce that he'll know it's going to stay in the marriage, so he'll give a lot of money. Palasuyanami? did we also say that we could force the mechutan, the woman's father, to give? So Amar Yisrael Papa said to Yehuda, Atu mi kamin alach de ova asya? Did I tell you to come in and force him to give a lot of money? Ova lo asya come in. I only told you to come in and not force him. I just want you to come in with me. What makes you think we're going to force him? So Malaysia, Yehuda said to her papa, Maloi didi, my coming in with you, hainu asye, that's implicitly forcing him, because he's going to add more money to the dunya in my honor. And therefore, if he thinks I'm coming with you, and he's going to see that, he's going to put more, that's an element of coercion, and therefore I'm not comfortable coming in. So Anati Gemara says, in spite of that, Achfiye, her papa, forced Yehuda with his words, he coerced him. Well, and he came in. However, Ishtik V'yasvi was sound, and he sat. He didn't really want to come in. He felt uncomfortable. He's going to be forcing the mechutin to give more money than he really should. Now, Savahahu, but Abba Sarah, who saw Yehuda there sitting quiet, he thought, Mirtach Ratach. He thought, why is he so quiet? He's just sitting there fuming. Maybe he thinks that the nedunya that the darim are giving is not enough. It's not appropriate for a kavod of Rapapa. So Kasvil Achol Madavale, so he wrote everything he had for his daughter's dowry. Now Lasaif Amale, at the end when he saw that Yehuda was still sitting there quietly, said, Hashtin Nami Le Mishtoi Mar, now the master's still not talking? Chai Damar, which is the lashon of a shvur, by the life of master, meaning of you, like Shaviki Midal Namsha, I didn't leave any money over by myself. Why are you still upset at me about the dowry that I'm giving? So Amale Yehuda said to Abba Sarah, what do you mean? Iminoi Didi? If you would have taken counsel from me, even this that you originally wrote, I didn't prefer, because I didn't like the whole idea that I came in over here and that I was an instrument here forcing you to give more than you should. So Malay, so when Abba Sarah realized what happened, he says, Hashaname Hadabi, could I also retract now? Because I would never have given so much. I just thought you really wanted me to give because you were giving me the sound treatment. So Malay, so Yehuda answered, Shavi Nafshach Hadran Ola Kamina. I didn't say that now you should make yourself into a retractor, into someone that's retracting from what he had originally promised. And therefore, I'm not saying that you shouldn't give now what you had promised already. And that's a story, again, that just illustrates this halacha of what we had mentioned previously, which is all from the purpose of having the woman's father give more money. And this story illustrates part of that halacha. Now, related, the Gemara brings that Bayim Nei Rav Yemer Saba Rav Nachman. This question of Yemer Saba asked from Rav Nachman, which again is continuing on this halacha of Ksubis bin Nindichron. Machu Ksubas Labala. If a woman sells her Ksuba to her husband, again, which if a man, let's say, divorces his wife, so she gets the Ksuba. But let's say she sells it to him, and she says that now if you're going to divorce me, I'm not going to get a Ksuba for this amount of money that you're giving me. Question is, Yesh Le Ksubas bin Nindichron? Is there still going to be a Ksubas bin Nindichron? Or is there not going to be Ksubas bin Nindichron? Now, the whole case of Ksubas bin Nindichron is when the woman dies first, which she would never have gotten the Ksuba anyway. She's selling it in case that if she does get the Ksuba. Now, if she would get the Ksuba, she's selling it and saying, look, I'm not going to take it. Let's say you die first, or if you divorce me where she gets the Ksuba, say, I'm not going to take it. I'm leaving your estate. If you give me, let's say it's $200, if you give me $25 on the $200, I'll be happy with that. So the question is, in the case of where she doesn't die first, and actually the whole sale is irrelevant somewhat, when she dies first, which is the case of Ksubas bin Nindichron, and then the husband dies. So the question is, do the sons still get their mother's Ksuba in that case, which is the case that it happened, that she died first, then the husband inherited that, and then they inherited, or not? Now the question is, do we say that since she sold it to her husband, so essentially she removed her whole reality of Yerusha, inheritance of her father, from this Ksuba? Because the whole purpose was that since she's the owner of this Ksuba, now in this Ksuba contract, we gave the rights of the grandfather, meaning of her father, to give it to his grandchildren. But now that she sold everything there to the husband, so the whole Yerusha is only coming from the husband, not through her at all. And therefore her sons have no rights to her Ksuba, and they split it equally with the rest of the brothers, meaning from the other wives. Or do we say that, no, they get Ksubas bin Nindichron? So Amalei Rava, responded to the questioner. It says, why are you asking if a woman sells her Ksuba to her husband? Again, which is this question that on the one hand, she sold it to him. On the other hand, it's not working through a sale. Essentially, the it would have been like that anyway if she didn't sell it, that it would go to the husband and now it's going to the sons. But he asked him, but Tibay Lech Mecheles, why don't you ask your question by a more common case occurrence, which is something that could happen where more than a woman selling her ksuba to her husband, she says that, yeah, I'm Michael, don't worry, you know, I don't need, you know, I'm happy just being married to you. I don't need to get a ksuba when you die or when we get divorced. Now, there, what it's, in other words, what's inherent in Rava's question is that it sounds like that why do you ask it only when she sells it to her husband? Sounds like because there she's going to get something out of it. So there maybe is where you'll say that maybe that's going to be valid. But it sounds like that by the case of when she's just being meichelet, that since she's not getting out of it, then it's not going to be a problem that her sons will still have ksubas ben nidchen. But Rava's question was, but still, she is removing her rights to it. So why don't you ask it? Why ask it by mechira, which it sounds like what you're saying by mechira is only because she's getting something out of it. Then it's a good sale. So then maybe she's losing all rights and her children will not get ksubas ben nidchen. But why? Rav is saying that mechila should be the same thing. You're insinuating from your question that, oh, mechila would not be like that. And just by forgiving, her sons would get it. But Rav is saying that why? If she's removing her rights because she's totally giving it away, her sons maybe should lose it. The question should apply to mechelis as much as mechira. Now, on that, Amalei, so the question responded to Rav and saying that you misunderstood my question. Do you think that because the woman's getting some hana, meaning some dividend, some return on the ksuba that she's selling to her husband, that's why I was entertaining that she loses all her rights and that therefore her sons are not going to get ksuba ben nidchen, which you were inferring from my question that, oh, we're in contrast to mecheles, where that then she's not getting anything back, that then she wouldn't lose the ksuba's rights and that her sons will get ksuba ben nidchen? So it's actually the opposite. Because as follows, hashda mecheres, if regarding a case when she sells the ksuba to the husband, where obviously she was in a difficult situation, which was called anusa, she was forced, she needed some money, which she wasn't getting from her husband. Where even there can be ba'ili, even there I had a question that I'm entertaining to say that she loses her rights. And that is the afagav de ikalame mezuzi ansua. That's in spite of the fact which I can say that she really shouldn't lose her rights to the ksuba, meaning that the her sons should still get ksubas ben nidchen. Because the whole reason why she's selling the ksuba is because she needs money. Damina, because I would say, it's like she got whipped with 100 lashes of a whip that has on the tip an iron tip, which is like the small little weight, which is called uchla, as if she was hit with that 100 times, because that's what it feels like when someone has no money, you'll do anything to get that money. So if over there I'm entertaining to say that she's going to be losing her rights, even though she really shouldn't lose the rights of ksubas ben nidchen, because the whole reason why she's selling is because she has no other alternative. So mecheles mebaye. So would you entertain that by mecheles, where there's no element of a nusa, she's not even getting anything out of it, she's just totally forgiving it to their husband, that of course over there that you could say that she's not going to get the ksuba, that she's going to lose the rights, because if even when she's forced to, I'll still entertain that, say she'll still lose it. So of course there she's going to lose it. In other words, not like your inference that you thought I was saying that mecheles for sure she'll get it. Actually, to the contrary. By mecheles, almost all the way the other way, that for sure she should not get it. Meaning that's still part of the question, that maybe she loses it over there, because there is not even an element of einus. So that was the question. Amar Rava. Rava first says, by way of introduction, he talks about a few cases that are obvious, and then he goes to the question that he has. He says, Pshitali, it's obvious to me, Mecheres ksuba salacher, a slightly different case, when she sells a ksuba to other people, which is what's called teva sana. What does it mean selling a ksuba? It's the rights. Now, what it means is because it's not a definitive sale in the sense of knowing that you're getting a product. If she gets widowed, meaning the husband dies first, or she gets divorced, which then she gets a ksuba, then the ones who bought it from her ksuba, then they'll get a payout. But if actually she dies first, then she doesn't have any ksuba to sell because her husband inherits her. Now the case actually was that she died first, so her husband inherited. So the question is, so that's Rava says, that's obvious that yeshla, that then her sons will have ksubas ben nidchen. They will have a ksubas ben nidchen. The reason is, as Rashi explains, is because even if she did not sell the ksuba, in this case she sold the ksuba to someone else. Now, even had she not sold the ksuba, still her husband would have inherited. He always inherits it when she dies first. Now, the Takanas Drabbanan was that in all situations, he's going to inherit it when she dies first, and therefore, essentially, what that means is that when she sells it, there's really nothing that she's losing in the ksuba. Nothing really changed, because this is something that always would have happened when she dies first. So the fact that she sold it didn't really impact it at all. Now, but then there's still another element that, but maybe that it was something lax in her eyes to sell off the ksuba, and she doesn't mind causing a loss to her sons if she's gets widowed or gets divorced, and therefore the Gemara's question is samai taima. Why is Rabbi saying it's so obvious to me? And that is, you're right, meaning nothing changed, and the husband will inherit it like he always inherits, and therefore the sons, her sons, should inherit it just like they always look super spin in. But there's still another element over here, which is, but still she's showing a certain laxity towards the ksuba, and therefore she obviously doesn't care about the ksuba, and hence with the tanai ksuba of ksubas bin nedichin should also be lost. On that Rabbah says in that the zuzi ansu, like we said before, it's not true. It's the money that forced her, the need for money that forced her to sell it to other people, and therefore since she needed it, it's not showing a kalas to it. So therefore Rabbah says it's obvious if she sells it to others, then the sons will have ksubas bin nedichin. Another case, mecheles ksubas labala. Again, a different variation of the previous question case, where it's from her to her husband, but she's not selling it to him. She's being mechel. She's foregoing on it. Now there, it's obvious to Rava that ain't like ksubas bin nedichin. That for sure her sons will not get ksubas bin nedichin, which means to say that when she dies and then her husband dies, her sons will not inherit her ksuba. My time. What's the reason? Because of chulei chilta. She totally was meichelet, and that means to say that there's a certain laxity in her eyes to totally lose her sons out of from the ksuba for nothing. She's not even getting gained. You can't say an element of einus. So therefore, she definitely loses everything that she has in that. If she's meichelet, if she totally forgives it and pardons the husband from giving it, there's no ksuba bin nedichin. However, the question that Rava does ask is this case. Mecheres ksuba salabala. The question that we had posed before. When she sells a ksuba to her husband, which again Rashi explains, is also an element of taivas hana. There's only a small amount of rights over here that is being sold to her husband, because it depends on what the circumstance is going to play out to see if he's even purchasing anything. In other words, if she dies, he inherits him. He inherits her. Now, if that's the case, he's not even purchasing anything from her. The only thing he's purchasing from her, from getting her ksuba, is if he dies first, then she will not collect. And therefore his estate, his inheritance, his yerusha will not lose anything. Now, what ended up playing out was actually that he didn't die. And she died first. And then it comes out that he's inheriting her. And therefore, do we say, k'mecheres l'acherim dami, that it's the same as we explained previously from Rashi, that when she sells to others, that then her sons will inherit ksubas bin nedichin. And the reason being is because the reason why she sold it is not a laxity. It's because she was forced with zuzi. She needed money. Moreover, when you sell something to others, that when the husband ultimately does inherit his wife and the sale really in legality has no validity in the final sense, because although it's a valid sale, nothing was ended up, there was no product at the end. Because it was only if he dies first or he divorced her that she'll have a ksuba, then the leichem will take it. But she dies first, they don't get anything, he inherits her, and therefore here also where he's inheriting her, so this that she sold it to him is really the same as selling it to other people, because nothing really changed, and therefore it should be like a regular case of ksubas bin nedichin. When she dies first and he dies, then her sons get it. Or do we say that this case would be similar to the other case that Rava said was pashut, when she's forgiving for it to her husband? The reason being is because since he has in his hand the ksuba, and she totally gave it over to him, at least in the other case she sold it to other people, but here where she totally gave it to him and there's nothing that she has, everything is his, and it's totally done with, and as if she doesn't want to have anything to do with this, then maybe we'll say it's like by the mechila to the bala, and therefore the sons do not have ksubas bin nedichin. So that was Rava's question. So the Gemara tells us, "Basa de baya hada pashta." After that, he asked the question, he resolved it, and he said that mecheres ksuba labala, when the woman sells a ksuba to her husband, is kemecheres lacherim dummy, it's like selling to others, and that is because ultimately nothing changed. And although she sold it, again, that doesn't show a zealous, it doesn't show a disregard for the ksuba because she needed the money, And moreover, nothing really changed because any case of even had she not sold it, that's the same process it would have gone through. So now even though she did sell it, the process didn't change, and therefore her sons will get Kshubas ben Nindichin according to Rava. Now on this, Masa Rav Yehuda bar Avin. Rav Yehuda bar Avin asked from a Mishnah Masechtas Yevamos. The Mishnah there is talking about halacha where if there was a woman that her husband went overseas, then one witness comes and tells her, your husband died. Now, that's a halacha that the woman's permitted, although it's only one witness, to go ahead and get married to someone else. Then, at a later point in time, her husband comes, it turns out he's really alive. So the halacha is, Tetzim Zem Ezeh, she has to leave both her new husband, she can't stay married to him, and neither can she go back to her first husband. Moreover, she does not collect the ksuba, not from the first husband and not from the second husband. Now the Mishnah there continues and says, Mesa, if she dies, Ein Yershin Shalzeh, Ve'en Yershin Shalzeh, Yershin Ksubasa. Neither the inheritors of the first husband or from the second one inherit her ksuba. Now, Bavinabam, we had asked regarding that halacha, Ksubasa Mayavidita. What does that mean? Which ksuba of this woman are we saying that neither inheritors inherit when you just said that she doesn't have a ksuba? On that, Vamar Papa Papa was set to explain, it's in reference to Ksubas Benin Dichrin. And that is, the Mishnah is saying that if she dies when they're both still alive and they inherit her, that her sons that she has from either husband that generally take the Ksubas of their mother, which is called Ksubas Benin Dichrin, when they come to split it with their father, with the rest of the inheritors of their father's estate, here in this case, they're not going to take it, rather they're going to split it equally with the rest of the brothers, because there is no halacha of Ksubas ben Nindichrin in that halacha. Now, on that, the Gemara concludes the question on Rava. Vamai, but why? Since Rava just explained, in the case of when she sells a Ksuba, that he considers that Anusa, she was coerced. In other words, there is an element pushing her. In the case of a sale, is because it's the money that's pushing her. And therefore, you said that although when she's Meichel, so then you lose it. You're totally giving it away. That shows a disregard for it, and therefore there's no ksubas ben nindichrin. Their sons do not inherit it. But when there's a sale, there's an element pushing her that forced her, so to speak, to do it, and therefore she does not lose. Yes, she's selling it, but the sons get the ksubas ben nindichrin. So if so, the Gemara says, Ahachi nami, here also in this case, in the Mishnah Masechtas Yevamos, lema yitzer anasa, we should say that her inclination forced her to go ahead and have this second union with this new husband because she desired a husband. So yes, although she was, now it turns out retroactively, she was Mizana as an Eishes Ish. So the question is, why should that cause her to lose Ksubas ben Nindichrin? That should be the same type of Anusa where some element pushed her to do something which, yes, causes her to lose her Ksuba, but it should not cause her to lose Ksubas ben Nindichrin. Why is it different than when you're selling it for money purposes, where both of them, you're not getting the Ksuba, but you don't lose Ksubas ben Nindichrin? So the Gemara says, you're right. But there, Hasim Kenasahu de Kansur Rabban, there the reason why there's no Ksubas ben Nindichrin is not because of this halacha, because you're right, because if you're in a situation where under duress, that will not make you lose the Ksubas ben Nindichrin. But it's because, like the Gemara there discussed at length in Masechtas Yevamos, is because she was not meticulous in her investigation to make sure her husband died before she got remarried. And that's the only reason why we allow her to get remarried based on one witness. So because of that, we make all these penalties, and one of them is that her sons do not get Ksubas ben Nindichrin. And therefore, that's for a different reason. But that doesn't refute Rava's halacha of when it's a sale, that since there's an element of anusa, she needed the money, that does not show a disregard, and hence not to lose the Ksubas ben Nindichrin. Continuing on this topic, Gemara says that Yosef Ravin bar Chanina kamed Rav Chisda. Ravin was sitting in front of Rav Chisda. The Yosef Akamah Meshmeid Rav Elazar, and he was sitting and saying the following halacha in the name of Rav Elazar. Again, these cases that we said, Meicheles Ksubas Labala, if a woman forgives, pardons the Ksuba for her husband to have to pay it to her, so Ein La Mezainis. So he says, moreover, he says, that not only does she not get her Ksuba, obviously, but she, when she's an almana, when she gets widowed, she doesn't get sustenance. The reason being is because one of the Tnoi Ksuba, the condition of the Ksuba, as we learned in previous daf, is that after the husband dies, she gets fed from the estate. But a Tnai Ksuba is not stronger than the Ksuba itself. And since she's forgiving the Ksuba, that the husband doesn't have to pay her the 200 zuz when he divorces her or when she's widowed from him, so neither does she get the Tnai Ksuba of getting Mezainas. Now, Amalei, Sir Rav Chisda responded, and he says, Ilav de ka'amrit li b'shmei de gavar Rabba, had you not said to me this halacha in the name of a great person like Rabbi Elazar, I would have told you that the halacha would not be that case. like a pasuk in Mishlei says, "Meishav ro'a tachas taiva," someone that returns a good with evil, then evil will never leave that person's house. In other words, because she was easy on him and said, "You don't have to give me the money when I get divorced or get widowed," so now she loses mezainis as a widow. I wouldn't have said such halacha, but now that you said name of Blazer, so that's the halacha that he says. Now the Gemara brings an incident relating to these halachas. That Yosef Rav Nachman v'Ula v'Avimi bar Rav Papi. There were these three Amiram, and the Yosef Rav Chiya bar Ami Gabayin and Rav Chiya bar Ami were sitting amongst them. So also who gaver the shchiv arasase. So there's a certain man that the woman he was engaged to passed away. And this is a halachic engagement, which in Talmudic times they had the arisin already, the ring. That was his arusa died. Now Amri Leh, they said to this man, Zilkavar, go bury the woman you were engaged to. Oh, I have l'ksubaso, or give her ksuba. Now the reason being is because, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, that the takana derabanan of the husband inheriting the ksuba was correlating to the husband's obligation to bury his wife. Now, these Amaruam held that when we say kivurasa techas ksubasa, that the obligation of the husband to bury his wife is in correlation to the ksuba he inherits from her, that they thought it meant the mono or messiah that is the primary takanas chacham of a ksuba, that is what it means to say correlating to that. Now, therefore, since here he's getting the ksuba because she's dying first, so he doesn't have to give her the mana masayim, which every woman has to get, he's getting it. So in place of that he's getting the ksuba, that in other words, he doesn't have to shell that money out, so he has to go ahead and bury her, which is the case even if she was just engaged to him. Now, Amlohu Rav Chiya said to those three Talmidei Chachamim, says, I learned that by the case of an arusa that dies, that she does not have the halachas of receiving a ksuba, which means to say that there's no obligation on the chassan to go ahead and bury her. Because Taninu learned the braisa as follows. Ish de arusa. If a man has a woman that's engaged him, that dies, so first of all, loy oinen. He does not become an oinen to be forbidden to partake of kachim. V'loy metamalo, neither if he's a kayin, is he allowed to go ahead and be metamatar, because she's not considered she'eroi, which is the term given for a wife. That's only when he has nesuin with her, not just erison. And v'chein he so to her, the other way around, if he dies, lo inenes, she does not become an oinen, and v'loy metamaloi, that is, as Rashi explained, she does not have to be metamatan. And that is also, although that there is a mitzvah to go ahead and involve in the burial of the six, seven closest relatives, which is spoken about in Vayikra Perichof Aleph, as it says over there, lo yitama, that for her he should be metama, meaning that it's a mitzvah, but this is not one of them. The husband is not considered one of the close relatives, because it's not called she'ira, she's not his wife, because she was only engaged to him. But of course, Rashi says if she wants to be metamatim, then she doesn't have any warnings, even if she's a kahanis, because in the Torah regarding the warnings of tum, is only b'nei Aaron, not b'nei Aaron. But she does not have to be metamatim. Now, Mesam, if she dies as Narusa, se'enu yarsha, he does not inherit. What does it mean he does not inherit? He does not inherit the nedunya, the dowry that her father wrote to her in the ksuba, that is going to bring for her into her marriage. The reason being is because the Yerusha of the husband, of what the father-in-law is sending along, only happens when there's chuppah, or when at least he gives her over to shluchim, but to messengers to send away his daughter. But before that point, he's not going to inherit what the father-in-law is sending along. Meishu, if he dies and she's still alive, then gaivik subasa, she collects her ksuba of mana, or masayim, or let's say if he added more to the ksuba, she gets that. That's what the braisa says. So Rav Chiya concludes his question. Time of the meishu, it sounds like only if he dies first and she's still alive, that then she gets her ksuba, ha meisahi, but if she dies, ain la ksuba, that then she does not get a ksuba. Now what that means is obviously if she's dead, she's not getting a ksuba. It means she does not get the din of the ksuba. Now what's the din of the ksuba? It means as follows. When we learned previously that kfirasa tachas ksubasa, that her burial is in place of her ksuba, Rav Chiya is explaining what you see from this braisa is obviously it was talking about when she's in a suwa, when she has the second phase of marriage, not just erisin. What that means is when it says that the kvura is tachas ksuba, it's not like that those three amiram had thought ksuba means to say the monomassim that he has to give her, and if he's not giving her, then he has to bury her. It means to say the nedunya that her father, there's two parties in the ksuba, what the husband's giving to the wife and what the father of the woman's bringing into the marriage that's going to the husband potentially. If she dies, he inherits her. So on that, the halacha is that in place of the ksuba, meaning the nedunya of the father that he inherits, because of what he's getting from her side, he has to bury her. Now the problem Rav Chiya was saying, but over here, when she dies as Narusa, he does not inherit her, as was clearly said in the Brisa. So therefore he also does not have to bury her. And therefore he argues it's not true. This man who is Arusa died, there's no obligation for him, although he's holding on to what you're calling the Ksuba, the Mana Messiah, but he's not getting the Nedunya that the woman's father wrote into it. And therefore, since he's not getting that part of the Ksuba, he has no obligation of Kfura. Now, however, the Gemara asks on Rav Chiya's halacha, that my time, what is the reason for that? What's the reason that when she dies and he's still alive, that we don't say that there is a claim of the din of ksuba that he should have to bury her because of like those Amoraim had thought, because of the Mana Messiah, which he is inheriting, he is getting that Mana Messiah, which really should go to the woman, but now that she died first, he gets to hold on to. Why don't we say that because of that, he should have to bury her? So Rav Hoysha said, She'ein ani kariba, because I cannot pronounce the text of the ksuba, which we mentioned in previous dafim, it has to fit into the text to allow her to get the rewards of what the ksuba says. Because the ksuba says, L'kishatinasi la'acher, when you marry someone else, titli masha kasev lechi, then you'll take what I've written for you. Now, that's the words they used to write in the document of the ksuba. Now, therefore, as long as he didn't die, or he didn't divorce her, so the whole ksub itself of the Mana Messiah was never yet indebted to her, because it's only when she marries someone else, at that time, then you'll take what I promised you. Now, therefore, here where she died first, so he's not inheriting anything from her, because it wasn't her Mana Messiah that now that she died, he's inheriting. The Mana Messiah she only gets when she's marrying someone else. If she dies first, she never ever got it to say that he's inheriting from her. That's why it wouldn't be applicable to say that what he's getting from her, the ksuba, he should have to give her kvura because he's not getting anything from her. The whole promise to her was only at a later point in time, which she never attained. Similarly, regarding this halacha of Rav Hoysha, the Gemara says that ki asa Ravin, when Ravin came, so Amr Shlakish, he said the name of Shlakish, Arusa Shemesa, and Arusa that dies, so ain't like ksuba. She does not have a ksuba again, which we explained means to say the din of ksuba, meaning that the Oris does not have to bury her. So Amalu Abaya said to Ravin, Zilu Amrli, go ahead and say to him, meaning regarding this halacha that you're introducing us, as we continue on Talmud Beis, Shekila Tivusach, that this that you want us to thank you, that you think we're so grateful to you that you told us this halacha, it's taken from you, and Shadiach is you can throw it on the thorns. Because Kfar Tigum, Rav Hoysha, Lishmaite B'Bavl, Rav Hoysha already explained his halacha in Bavl, again, as we just explained, the reason for being that an Arusa that dies, that she's not going to get this ksuba, meaning the din ksuba of a kfura, and therefore we already know this halacha already before. Now, the Gemara continues quoting from our Mishnah that spoke about another one of the inherent Tanai ksuba, that although the husband didn't write it, he still has obligated in it, is that Benon Nukvin, the Yahavin, Lechi Minai, V'chulu, that regarding your female children that you can have from me, that then they're going to be fed from the estate as long as they're single before they move on. Now, there's actually machlekes regarding the girsa of this text. Rav learned that until when do the daughters get fed after the husband's death from the estate? It's added to lokin leguvrin, where the gimel is before the vase, that until they're taken by men, meaning until they get married. The Levi Tani, actually Levi learned the other way around, which is same letters, but Vez before Gimel, is Ante Devagrin, until they become Begeris, until they become 12 and a half, which then they're old enough, then they're adults, then they're not in the father's domain anymore, then they won't get fed anymore. Now that the Gemara asks on both interpretations. L'Rav, according to Rav, that he says it's only until they get married, Avagav Debeger, even though that she's already Begeris, but how could you say that? But once she reaches the state of Bagris, she's no more in her father's domain, so why would she get fed from his household? Similarly, with Levi, Avagav the Insiv, Levi who says is until she becomes a Begeris. So let's say she gets married at age 9. She's still going to get fed until she turns 12 and a half, but she's totally not in her father's domain anymore. Why would she get fed from his estate? So the Gemara explains, Ella, rather, both regarding bagur v'loy insiv, if she becomes a begeris but didn't get married yet, or insiv v'loy bagur, or she already got married but was not a begeris yet, the kulam alei pligi, no one's going to argue, of course she's not going to get mezainis anymore from the father's estate because she's not in his domain anymore. Ki pligi ba'arusa v'loy bagur. The machlekes between Rav and Levi was when she gets engaged and she's not 12 and a half yet. So Rav that said the term aditi lakhan l'guvin, until there's lakicha, till she's taken by a man. Kicha is a reference that we learned out the halacha of kedushin. That's where what Rav was talking about, even though she's not a begeris. Now Levi, who said it's only when she's tevagrin, until she becomes a begeris, was either when she becomes a begeris or nisuin, which is just like bagris, where then she's totally removed from her father's domain. Whereas Erisin, she's not totally removed for every single halacha, as we find by Hafaras Nadarim, and therefore that's the machlokes regarding Erisin. That's the difference between Levi and Rav, if the woman in that state would still get fed from the state or not. And Machain Tani Levi b'masniti, so too Levi taught according to his opinion in his brises. That's, as Rashi explains, Levi organized his own Shisha Siddurim of brises, like Rabchi and Rabbi Yishe, he made his own brises. He taught Ad Tevagrin, that the woman, that the daughters are going to be fed in the text of the Ksuba until she becomes a begeris. And v'yimtis manein din savin, and that it reached the time for them to get married, which the Gemara asked, Tarti, what do you mean? She's going to get fed until it's both of those, until she's begeris and that she time for a marriage comes? So rather, it's oid tevagrin, either that she becomes a begeris, or yamtis manein le'is nasova, or that the time for her nisuin came along, where again, that's levi l'shatasa, where it's nisuin and not erisin, where it has to be totally removed. Now, what does it mean that it reached the time for her marriage? That says, as the Gemara later on, the Perek Afa Pi, and Daf Nun Zayin Alaf explains, when the husband told the woman that he wants to marry, that, okay, are you ready for the wedding? Only then does she gets 12 months, if she's a Basula, to go ahead to the Chasna. Now, if the time for that came, and they didn't get married yet, then she already gets fed from her husband's estate, so then she's removed from her father's estate, and therefore she wouldn't get fed from the father's estate anymore. But again, it's the idea of Nisuin, not of Erisin, like Rav had said. Now the Gemara actually says that this machlokes amiram is kitanoi. Actually, it's machlokes tanoim, because we learned the braisa that says ad mosei abas nizainis. Until when does a daughter get fed from the father's estate from this tanai ksuba benon nokvin? So the Tanakama says ad shetei aris, until she gets engaged, which is like Rav. Shemar belaza amin and Rav Laza, they said ad shetei pagra, until she becomes a begaris, which is like Levi, meaning either bagris or nisuin, which both totally remove her from her father's domain. Now Tanai Rav Yosef had taught in the braisa that it's adi havyan, that the girl gets fed until there's havaya. Now, the question is, Iboilu, they wondered, havaya de erisin? What type of havaya? Havaya connotes a union with a man. Did it mean the havaya of the being of engagement? Or havaya de nisun? Or did he mean the havaya of nisun, which is essentially, is it like Rav? Or is it like Levi? Nothing more to take, let it stand. It's not clear what that braisa meant with adi havayan. Now, continuing on this halacha, the Gemara says, "Amli Rav Chizda Rav Yosef." Rav Chizda said to Rav Yosef, "Mishmi alach mined Rav Yehuda. Did you hear from Rav Yehuda regarding an arusa, a yisayma, an orphan girl that's engaged? I mean, in the same case we're discussing up until now, yesh lamezaynus. Does she get sustenance from her brothers? I mean, does she get from the estate? Or yain lamezaynus? Or does she not get sustenance? Which again is the same machloikas that we had between Rav and Levi. So Amalei, so he said to Rav Chizda, I didn't hear clearly from Rav Yehuda either way. But it's logical to say that she does not get mezainis, she does not get fed from the estate from her brothers. The reason being is because what's the reason why the Rabban instituted mezainis for a daughter from the father's estate? I mean, why did they make this one of the Tarkanis Rabbanan of Tanai Bezen? The reason being is because not to have the girl degraded by having to go ahead collecting by the daughters, because she doesn't get the inheritance, the sons get the inheritance. So what's the single daughter going to do? So therefore, they instituted that that's an aksuba that she'll be fed from this date. And that is what Rav Yosef is telling Rav Chizda, here that doesn't apply, and therefore there's no reason to have ksuba, that tanai ksuba over here. Reason being is because Kivan the Irsa, since she's engaged, now when her chasen sees she's being degraded collecting door to door, he's not going to be happy with it. He's not going to be pleased with her being so degraded, and therefore he's going to feed her from his own estate. Even though, yes, possibly he's not obligated, which would be going like those opinions who hold that There's no obligation for the chassan to feed her. That's only when it's 12 months, according to everybody. It's only either when they get married or when it's the time for the marriage. But since they're engaged, he's not gonna be happy with that. So he'll feed her, and since he'll be feeding her, therefore the whole idea of this tnai ksuba benan nukvin will not apply, and therefore the brothers will not have to feed her. Now, Amalei, Rav Chisra responded to Rav Yisi. He says, if that's the case that you didn't explicitly hear this halacha, then actually misvar isla. I would argue on you. Logically, I would say that she does get fed from the brothers. The reason being is because actually her aris, the man she's engaged to, will actually not feed her. And the reason being is because kivin delay kim le begava, since he doesn't know for sure if he's going to end up marrying her, because maybe he's going to find some blemish with her when he finally gets closer to her and he sees that there's something wrong with her. So leishadiz izi bichdi. He's not going to just throw money out the window for nothing. He doesn't know that this is the woman he doesn't want degraded because he's going to be married to her. He's not sure if he's going to marry her. So therefore the artist is not going to give her, and therefore you're back to the Takanas Kesuba of having the brothers feed this girl because not to be degraded, collecting around by the Pesachim. Vikadami, those that say that actually the discussion was in the reverse. That Omaleh, he said to him, Mishmalishmili, Rav Yisrael said to Rav Chisra, look, I didn't hear clearly, but Misvar Isla, logically, would say that she does get fed from the brothers, from the father's estate. Because Kivin Dole Kimla Begava, since the man she's engaged to doesn't know if they're going to end up consummating this relation, so Leishadi Zuz Bechti, he's not going to just throw money out for nothing. Therefore, he's not going to feed her, and therefore, she has to be fed from the estate. On that Amalei, and that Rav Chisra responded to him, E mishmalish milach, if you didn't hear it clearly, the misvar lesla. Actually, logically would be that she would not get from the brothers. Because given the irsa, since she's engaged, he's not going to be happy that the woman he's engaged to is collecting door to door, is not going to reflect appropriately, and therefore he will feed her, and therefore there's no reason for the brothers to have to feed her. Now, continuing on this topic, the Gemara continues with Simen de Gavri, the mnemonic for the men, meaning for the names of the Amiram that the Gemara is going to quote, are Shak Zaraf, five different Amiram that are mentioned in the following five questions. And the topics of the five questions are Me'ana, she is a katana that refuses the marriage, V'yavama, which is when her husband dies without any children, and then she goes and marries her brother-in-law, or Shnia, which is a secondary erva, not a illicit relationship that's biblically prohibited but rabbinically prohibited, or a Arusa, woman that's engaged, or a Vanusa, or a woman that is violated. Now, on that, the Gemara explains what are these five questions. First one being, they asked from Rav Sheshes, which that's the shin of Shak Zaraf. So again, these are the names of the five Amiram. So they asked from Rav Sheshes the following question. And these are continuing on this theme about if they have Mezainus or not, which is this discussion that we're talking about. We're talking about that the one of the Tnaig Suba is, as we stated on the top of this Amid, that Benon Nukvin, the Havalach Menayu, that the daughters are going to be fed from the father's estate. So the Gemara continues and asks, Mima Enes, regarding a minor orphan that her brothers married her off to a man, which is a rabbinic marriage. Now, because of a rabbinic marriage, the rabbis allowed her to do miyun, which is she could refuse the marriage whenever she wants to, and then retroactively, she wasn't married, and she goes back to her original status as a single girl back home. So the question is, when she's a mama enes, yesh la mezainis? Does she go back to what she originally was, getting mezainis from her father's estate, meaning from the brothers, until she becomes a begaris? Oy ain la mezainis? Or maybe do we say that she doesn't get mezainis because do we say that, yes, it uproots the original nisuin, so it's like she was never married, so if she's never married, so then why shouldn't she get mezainis? Or do we say that, no, ultimately she was married, and therefore she was removed from her father's domain, so although now she's doing miyun, but once she's done, she's done. So Amar Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes responded, he says, Tinisu, we learned this in the Braisa. The Braisa says, Amana, regarding a widow, which Rashi points out, we're talking about a widow from that was only had Erisin, because if it was a widow from Nisuin, then we wouldn't say that she has Mezainis, because the words in the text of the Ksuba are that his daughters will be fed adet to lakhan, until you're taken. Now, even according to Levi, he agrees that when there's at least Nisuin, that then there's no more Mezainis for that woman. So we're talking about a woman that was widowed, but now is Bebeis Aviyah. So she's back in her father's household. She was widowed from engagement. Or Grusha Bebeis Aviyah, or that she was divorced in her father's household. Or Veshemeres Yav Bebeis Aviyah, or a woman that's anticipating Yibum that's in her father's household. So the halacha is yesh l'mezaynis. So she gets mezaynis. Rabbi Huda says, oid beveis aviyah, if she's still in her father's household, then yesh l'mezaynis. Then she gets mezaynis. Ein beveis aviyah, if she's not in her father's household, then ein l'mezaynis, then she doesn't have mezaynis. Which again, like for example, in the first case of Almana, if it sounds like that Rabbi Huda is saying that if she goes back to her father's household, because she was never totally removed with Nisu and she only had Erison, then she gets Mezainis. If she was she's not Beveis Aviyah, then she doesn't get. So the Gemara asked, Rabbi Huda and Tanakama. So Rabbi Huda is saying the same thing. They're both saying that if she's still in her father's household, which means say that she comes back, once you have Nisu, you're not coming back. But when you come back, you get Mezainis. If you don't, then you don't have. So Elalav, so Rav Sheshes concludes, and this is what you could see from this brisa is, that you must say, Mima Enes Sikibenai. So what are they arguing about? They're arguing about a case of Mima Enes, where the Tanakama saw the Isla, Tanakama holds that she gets Mezainas. In other words, the Tanakama was saying that regarding Amon and Beveis Aviyah and all the cases, that if she goes back to Beveis Aviyah, that she gets Mezainas. So for sure, Mima Enes wouldn't be any worse than, let's say, an Amona from Erisin, where there's all these cases, there's no Nisuin. Because when you're Almana or Grusha, all these cases from just from Erison, there was never Nisuin. And more of a Ma'enis, which totally uprooted, even if there was Nisuin, but it was totally uprooted. So she, according to Tanakama, a Ma'enis would get a Ksuba, would get Mezainis. But Behuda Sava Lesla, Behuda holds that the Ma'enis would not. In other words, the question they asked from Rav Sheshe, she said it's actually Machloi Gesanom, as we've seen this Braisa, because as Rav Sheshe explains the Braisa, right, when Behuda says the words, Oid beveis aviyah. What are the words oid beveis? Oid sounds like that she's still in her father's household. Now, all the cases weren't that she's still. All the cases were that maybe she's coming back to beveis aviyah, in contrast to the case where she's not coming back. Must be, is what Rav Sheshe is pointing out in Rav Huda's opinion, it must be that for a woman to get her mezainis from the state, it must be that she was always beveis aviyah, meaning that she never left from there to a state of nisuin. Which maybe the other cases, let's say Almana from Erison, she never went to Nisuin, so she was always Beveis Aviyah. Because in the state of Erison, the woman is still someone in Beveis Aviyah. Then she would get Mezainis. But if at any point in time she went out to Nisuin, then she wouldn't, which obviously Rav Sheshe's understanding in Rav Yehuda, that even in the case when she was Miana, even if she ultimately retroactively undid that whole marriage that she had, this rabbinic marriage to this husband, doesn't make a difference. She wasn't oid de beveis aviyah. She wasn't still. She might have come back, but that's not valid enough to get mezainis. And therefore, he answered those who asked him that actually your question is a machlokes tanoim. The second of the five topics that are in doubt, the Gemara says, Abayi Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish asked, who he's the kuf of Rish Lakish, he asked the following question. Bas Yevama. The daughter of a Yavam, in other words, the brother-in-law, who's the Yavam, who marries the Yavama. And then from that union of Yibam, they have a daughter. Yesh le Mezainis, so the question is, does she have Mezainis? In other words, after that, her father, who's the Yavam, she doesn't know any better. She was never a child of the previous husband who never had children. Rather, the brother-in-law went and married the Yavama. So after her father dies, does she get Mezainis from her brothers, from the father's estate? Or does she not get? Now, why wouldn't she get? The reason being is because Kivin the Amar, since the master explains the Maseches Yevamos, the Ksubasa al Nichsei Bayla Harishin, actually, the Yevamos Ksuba, though she's entering in the marriage with the Yavam, the Ksuba is not on the Nechasim of the Yavam. She rather collects her Ksuba from the first husband, the one that died without any children, from that estate. Now, the question is, the Ktnai Ksuba, the condition of the Ksuba, is therefore going to be just like the Ksuba itself. So Mezainis, the daughter being fed, is a Ktnai Ksuba. So therefore, just like the Ksuba is not being collected from the Yavam, neither should the Ktnai Ksuba be collected from the Yavam, and therefore Lesla, she's not going to get Mezainis, because from this man's estate, there's no Ksuba, and therefore no Ktnai Ksuba. Idilmo, maybe, Kivan, since as the Gemara there explains in Masechta Yevamos, the Ilesla Marishain, that if the previous husband doesn't have any money, there's no estate to collect the ksuba from, then tekinu l'rabbanan mishaini, then the rabbanan did institute that she should collect her ksuba from the yavam. And the reason being is, like any woman, the purpose of the ksuba is that it shouldn't be easy in his eyes just to let her go, which if there's a ksuba, it's going to make him think for a second when it comes to financial consideration. And therefore, there is an element of ksuba from the yavam, and therefore isla, so therefore there also should be a tanai ksuba, to have his daughter being fed from his zainais. So which one is on that? The Gemara says, take or let it stand. It's not clear regarding a bas yavama if she is going to have mezainis, she's going to get fed, because there are cases when there is a ksuba from the yavam, hence the tnai ksuba would also apply. Or do we say that no, because primarily the ksuba is from the first one, not from the yavam, and therefore just like there's no ksuba, therefore there's no tnai ksuba of the bas nezainis min hanechasim.